Hello, travelers, and welcome to Go See, Do, Explore.
Here, we dive deep into the heart of travel, sharing hidden gems, unforgettable experiences, and the stories that make each destination unique.
Whether you're a seasoned traveler or dreaming of your next getaway, you're in the right place to get inspired.
I'm Christopher.
And I'm Ashley.
And together, we'll set the course for your next great adventure and discover the stories that make each place unforgettable.
It's time to go, see, and do more. Let's explore.
We're back for episode 4. Today, we're continuing our conversation on the Michigan bucket list, covering the western lower peninsula of Michigan. So we're going to take you through some of our favorite places to visit in the western lower peninsula. First, we've got Grand Rapids. Grand Rapids is a city in Michigan that is not as big as cities like Detroit, but has really a lot to offer. What's your favorite thing to do in Grand Rapids?
Well, there's the river. It's really beautiful to walk by it. And then, of course, as you know me, I travel for food. Grand Rapids is a wonderful food city. And if you like beer, it's probably the biggest brewery city in Michigan.
Yeah, it's a big time beer city. Michigan's largest breweries are from Grand Rapids or the Grand Rapids area. There was a period of time there where Founders was really kind of it. There are a lot more now. Yeah, it's a nice city, lots of fun things to do. Tends to have a lot of events, concerts, and they have some minor league sports there. It's also a really good base for a lot of destinations in Western Michigan. It's relatively centrally located to a lot of the places you might want to go in Western Michigan. So it's a good place to stay. I enjoy this city with the great food and the interesting things to do and the good proximity to other nice places.
There are some museums too. You've got the Grand Rapids Art Museum and the Public Museum are probably the two biggest, and they're both in the downtown area. I don't know within walking distance, but yeah, there are two museums to see in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, the museums are good there too, for sure, for sure.
And we went to Grand Rapids around Christmas and we got to see their Chris Kindle market, their Christmas market. And it was really cool. I really enjoyed it. It looked like what I'd kind of seen the European Christmas markets to look like. But beyond that, their new, they call it the farmer's market, where it's located. It seemed like a place that would be really fun to explore in a time that's not Christmas busy.
Yeah, it was very busy when we were there. But they have retail and they have restaurants or at least food counters in that space that are open year round, including they have a small retail location for our new favorite olive oil store, which has a main store in downtown Grand Rapids and some other ones around Michigan. So yeah, that's Grand Rapids. Not too far from Grand Rapids, just heading sort of north and west towards the lake, is the Silver Lake Sand Dunes. This is a state park. At least part of it is a state park. And then there's some surrounding area that's privately owned. But giant sand dunes, really the whole, almost the entire west coast of Michigan on Lake Michigan is sand dunes. We have some amazing sand dunes in western lower Michigan. These aren't the only sand dunes by any means. In fact, we're going to talk about some other ones really soon. But what's really unique to Silver Lake is that it's a big ORV destination. People take off-road vehicles and Jeeps and trucks and things like that, and they drive these sand dunes. They have courses.
I really want to do one of the dune buggies. That's kind of been high on my to-do list. We had a trip planned to Silver Lake last spring, but we had to cancel it due to car trouble. But that was one of the things that I was hoping to do, so that's still on my list. We've been to Silver Lake before, but we have never done the dune buggy ride.
It looks really fun.
It looks really fun. But there are a lot of beautiful hikes. There's Silver Lake, obviously, and then there's a Silver Lake State Park, right on the lake.
You could probably paddle there, right, in that lake, if you're a paddler. Nice place. Really nice place. You know, another really great state park in Michigan, which is next on our list, is Hartwick Pines State Park. Hartwick Pines is this rather large state park that's sort of just north of Grayling on I-75. So this is more north than these other places.
Kind and of probably more east too. I had to break this list up somehow.
It's right in the center, honestly, or maybe slightly west. But Hartwood Pines has this really, really old growth pine forest and is a really important and historical site in Michigan for the history of the lumber industry here. Lumber was and is a big industry in Michigan, and Michigan, like a lot of places, was clear-cut a lot of it around the time of industrialization in the United States. The Civilian Conservation Corps planted a lot of new forests, and we have a lot of that up in northern Lower Michigan as well, and even in Hartwood Pines, there's some of that. But Hartwood Pines has some of these really, really cool, big, old pine trees. They also have a really nice campground, and they have a cool kind of museum and interactive historical area where you can see a lot of exhibits and you can walk around outside and get a sense of the history of the lumber industry in Michigan.
There's a lot of hiking trails, too. It's a kind of a good spot if you're on your way up to the UP to kind of stop and get out of the car and stretch your legs.
Yeah, I have a lot of fond memories from Hartwood Pines. It's not far from where my grandparents lived growing up, and so we would go over there, and then as a scout, we would camp there too, and then we would canoe on the Ausable River, which is not far from there. That's another thing you can do in that grayling area.
Yeah, it's really just a beautiful place in Michigan to kind of be immersed in the forest.
One thing that's worth mentioning is there was one time that we stopped there and camped sort of on our way to somewhere farther north, and that worked out really well. If you're doing a road trip in Michigan and you're trying to get up to the UP and you just don't have the amount of time you need to make that drive in a single day or whatever, that can be a nice place to stop. It's pretty easy to get in and out of there. It's right off of I-75, but it's a nice campground, good restrooms, nice campsites. Yeah.
And I think this year might be the exception, but I think it's typically one that if you're not picky about sites, it's not terribly difficult to get a site. This year might be challenging because a lot of the campgrounds in Michigan are closed for renovation this year due to some money that they're using federal funds to do some big renovations.
It's going to be really nice, but this is going to be hard. This year being 2024, by the way.
Yes.
So another thing to do in the Western Lower Peninsula is to drive M22. Now, if you live in Michigan or if you've been to Michigan fairly consistently, you've seen the M22 stickers, you've seen the M22 t-shirts, you've heard about people maybe stealing M22 road signs, a thing that happens. What is M22 and why do people want to steal the signs so much? Well, M22 is a Michigan state highway. It runs from Traverse City to, I believe it's Frankfort or maybe Manistee. It runs, though, up into Leelanau Peninsula through towns like Sutton's Bay and Omena and sort of zags across Leelanau Peninsula and goes through Leland and Glen Arbor and then sort of down through Empire. And anyway, you get it. It's a kind of a horseshoe shape. And so it becomes this scenic highway that you can drive the Leelanau Peninsula. The Leelanau Peninsula really is what is featured with M22, which is Michigan's pinky, I suppose. It's that northwest corner peninsula that sits northwest of Traverse City. Very scenic place. Historically, a lot of farmland, but in more recent years, there are resorts. There's a lot of viticulture happening, and there's just coastline everywhere. In Michigan, if you don't know, if we haven't mentioned it, Michigan has more coastline than any other state except Alaska. If you count, of course, the Great Lakes as coastline, which we do.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's incredible. And so driving M22, especially on a beautiful day in the summer or the fall, just a really great way to enjoy the natural scenery of Michigan and to visit all these little towns on the Leelanau Peninsula and in Leelanau County, like Empire, which we'll get to later.
I have to say, when I originally wrote this blog post about Michigan bucket list, drive M22 is probably the one that got the most feedback. Like, what do you mean drive M22? And I have to think that most of those people making those comments have never driven M22 because it is so beautiful. And I feel like by saying drive M22, it's saying visit Fishtown, visit Sutton's Bay, see all of the places, the wonderful, beautiful towns in northern Michigan that are on M22. Yeah. So that's why that's on there, because I couldn't pick any specific place.
Yeah, for sure. And don't steal the road signs.
Don't do it. Supposedly, I heard a few years ago that they were going to be redoing the road signs so people wouldn't want to steal them.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
You're going to hate this sign.
But the last time we were there, the signs were exactly the same. So I don't, yeah. I don't know.
They have reduced the number of signs and then they've painted on the road. They paint on the road now, M22.
In case people have stolen the signs.
I guess it's good. It's good branding run amok. All right. So speaking of all that, our next one here in the Western Lower Peninsula is Traverse City. Traverse City is one of the larger cities in the Northern Lower Peninsula, and I suppose then in the Western Lower Peninsula too. It's not far from Leelanau, where we were just discussing. It sits at the south end of the Grand Traverse Bay, which is the body of water that separates Leelanau Peninsula from the rest of Michigan. Traverse City is probably my favorite place in Michigan. I think it is. I mean, if I have to pick, it's a place, again, not far from where my grandparents, a lot of my family have lived. And I've been up there a lot since I was little. I continue to try to go up there as much as I can. What's so great about Traverse City? Why do we love it so much?
Is saying food ridiculous?
It's more than food. For me, I mean, the food is good.
The food is great.
Has not always been good, though. That's kind of a newer thing.
I'm not saying just the food. The sights are beautiful. There is so much around to see and do. I recently wrote on the blog about Traverse City, like a destination guide to Traverse City, and I definitely dig deeper into that. So if you are interested in knowing why we love Traverse City, definitely check that out. We can put a link in the show notes. But it's just... I mean, I don't have that childhood nostalgia of visiting Traverse City, and it's still one of my favorite places. There was a Facebook post the other day that somebody asked, what is your favorite place to visit in northern Michigan? Or it may have just been in Michigan in general. And I commented Traverse City, to which I got a reply from somebody, too busy.
And it is busy. This is the thing about Traverse City these days. It's busy. And
the
it's,
secret's out.
And it's pretty expensive a lot of times in the summer and the high season to stay there. There are ways around that I'm sure we can do on another episode, talk about how to save money in that part of Michigan. But it's busy. It's one of those places that's busy for a reason. I think it's really beautiful. There's a lot of really fun things to do there. The weather is almost always great in the summer. And I mean, there's all that fresh water. We spent a week up there this past summer, and I was working during that week, and every hour I just walked to the bay and stared at the bay because it's just so nice. Anyway, I could go on and on about Traverse City. We'll do an episode sometime, but it's really a special place.
It's also a jumping off point for visiting Leelanau or the wineries of Old Mission. Old Mission is very close to Traverse City, and there's not really a lot of lodging options. So if you want to visit Old Mission, Traverse City is really the place where you would stay.
Yeah, Old Mission being the peninsula that's in Grand Traverse Bay, just north of Traverse City. And like Ashley mentioned, there is a lot of viticulture there and winemaking there, too. Some of my favorite winemaking in the world happens there. And so, yeah, I guess another reason to love Traverse City. I think it's time for our wine break. Okay, so very appropriately for our wine break this episode, we are going to Leelanau, M22 even. We have here a sparkling wine called Sandpiper. I describe Sandpiper as our house sparkling wine. Sandpiper is from Mauby. Mauby is a vineyard and winery that is near Sutton's Bay on Leelanau. We mentioned it. It's just kind of northwest of Traverse City. And what's really interesting is that Larry Mauby was a northern Michigan viticulture pioneer. He was planting hybrid grapes a long time ago. I want to say in the 60s. Kind of before viticulture in Michigan really took off. And to this day, they use a lot of hybrids like Cayuga. They also use vinifera grapes. But they have really outstanding facilities for making sparkling wine. They do it all sorts of different ways. If you're a sparkling wine nerd, they do some in the traditional method. They do some like the Prosecco method in the tank and things of that nature. They've got all that equipment for all these different processes. They specialize in sparkling wine. They make almost exclusively sparkling wine. They have a couple other things they do, but pretty much everything they have that we've had is really, really great. It's a fun place to visit. They've got a great outdoor area that you can sit and taste. And so, yeah, Sandpiper is semi-dry, which in a sparkling wine I think is really nice. It's really refreshing and light. And yeah, happy to have this episode for our Western Lower Peninsula of Michigan.
I still feel like one of the best times we've ever had at Mauby was the time that we visited, and I think it was October 2020 during the Michigan-Michigan State game, and Michigan State won, and then people started singing the fight song.
It was good. They were really into it.
They were very into it.
Probably the last good moment we've had is Michigan State people. But yeah, that's our wine break. Mauby Sandpiper, check it out. Okay, we're back for the second half of our Western Lower Peninsula of Michigan bucket list. And so we are going to a little town called Ludington. Ludington is also on Lake Michigan, so on the west side of the Lower Peninsula. It's kind of in the middle, northern part of the middle of that very long coastline on Lake Michigan. Ludington has some incredible sand dunes, and there's a state park there. It actually, a lot of it used to be, I think, a gravel mining facility or a sand mining facility, maybe both. It was donated to the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, and it's actually Lower Michigan's largest state park.
There are a lot of trails you can walk at Ludington State Park, and there is a kayaking trail even in Hamlin Lake, which could be a lot of fun if you don't sink in up to your knees.
I do not recommend doing this in a 16-foot tandem kayak.
We should go again with our smaller kayaks.
We should go again with smaller kayaks because it was not... We have this tandem that we'll talk about on another episode, I'm sure, and it is a Great Lake kayak. Not a Great Lake kayak. It's good for lakes. It is not so good for narrow bodies of water or very shallow bodies of water.
Or anytime you have to turn it at an angle.
But apart from the state park, which is really incredible, Ludington has a fun little downtown with some good restaurants, shopping opportunities. There's a beach right downtown, so you don't have to go all the way to the state park if you don't want to. It's also the Michigan side home of the SS Badger. The SS Badger is an old steam passenger ferry that runs between Manitowoc, Wisconsin, of Netflix fame, and Ludington, Michigan.
Infamy, I would say, probably.
Yeah. We did that a couple years ago. It was really fun. I think it takes about 3 hours, I want to say. Does that sound right? Or 2 hours?
And I should say it's a car ferry, not just a passenger.
That's true. It is a car ferry as well. Yes. Good point. And so it's this kind of old school bit of maritime tradition that is still very functional today. If you need to get across the lake from up there and you don't want to drive all the way around it. Because if you don't know, Lake Michigan is actually quite huge. Like sometimes, if you're familiar with the Great Lakes, you know this, obviously. But for people that don't realize, they think they're like, oh, it's a big lake, whatever. It's an inland sea, basically. It's like a freshwater ocean in the middle of the continent, these lakes. And it's 50 miles across, I think. And it would take you, I don't know, 6 hours probably to drive around to the other side, I would guess. Yeah, so it's definitely can be worth it.
And the SS Badger is, I think, the only floating thing that is on the U.S. Register of National Historic Places.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool little bit of history that you can float across the lake on. And I feel the need to mention House of Flavors in Ludington.
Oh, thank you, yeah.
Which is amazing ice cream, good food. If you happen to be there outside of peak tourism season, they have been known to give you free ice cream with your meal. If you're there between Memorial Day and Labor Day, that's not going to happen. But if you happen to be in Ludington in March, like we were once, we got free ice cream with their meal, which was pretty good because their ice cream, they run the Park City Dairy, which they won't tell you what store brands they make. But basically, if you're in the Midwest and your grocery store has a store brand, it's probably Park City Dairy of ice cream, I should say.
Yeah. It's worth mentioning that they have both an ice cream counter, like a walk-up. There's also a restaurant. So what Ashley's saying, they'll give you free ice cream with your meal. It's like a sit-down restaurant situation.
They won't give you free ice cream at the ice cream counter. Don't try it.
Right. Right. So Ludington, really, really fun place. We've spent a lot of time there.
Can I mention really quick the Jack Pine hike-in campground?
Oh, please, yeah.
So we've done this only once, but Ludington State Park is also home to probably one of the most unique campgrounds in the Lower Peninsula, and that is the Jack Pine campground, which is entirely hike-in, so you cannot drive there. The Jack Pine campground is on the gravel road out to the Big Sable Point Lighthouse, but no cars are allowed, so you can bike your gear in, or when we did it, we carried everything on a wagon, just kind of to get it so you're not carrying it on your back. And we did it for one night, but it was really cool. And it was a way to kind of get a picture of the lighthouse at sunset. And I think this still makes me mad to this day. That night we were there, you could see the northern lights from Ludington, but we were asleep. It still makes me mad to this day. Just like we had an experience in St. Ignace last Labor Day where you could see the Northern Lights from Mackinac City.
Right. We had a southern view, though.
We had a southern view. But we were so close. And we were sleeping. If you're up for a little bit of hiking, camping, Jack Pine is a great place. And I think one of the only places in the Lower Peninsula where you can have that experience.
Yeah.
One of the few, I should say.
Also, if you like little scrubby pine trees like I do. Another great destination in the Western Lower Peninsula is Holland. We talked about Grand Rapids earlier. Holland is less than 45 minutes by car from Grand Rapids. So these are good cities actually to pair together. Holland was settled, like much of Western Michigan, by people from the Netherlands. But Holland, as you can guess by the name, has really embraced this tradition. So they have a windmill from the Netherlands that they've brought over. They have a Tulip Time festival in May that celebrates the tulips, which are famously associated with Holland. They have wooden shoes. They have stores that sort of trade in Dutch things, Dutch-themed things. There's a lot of that in Holland. And if that's something that you're interested in, it's a great place to go. But additionally, they have really great coastline on Lake Michigan, too, with a really nice state park. That state park doesn't have great camping, but it does have camping. There's an inland lake, so if you're looking for something like that, that's there. It's not far from a lot of other destinations. And it's just this really nice, clean, modern city. It has heated sidewalks. So in the winter, if you want to walk around somewhere where there's not snow, that's a nice thing you can do. New Holland Brewing is there, another sort of, I'd say, semi-famous brewery that you can go eat and drink at. What else do you like in Holland?
I find it interesting in Holland that the windmill, they claim, is the last windmill to ever leave the Netherlands. So after De Swan was removed from the Netherlands and rebuilt in Michigan, they outlawed removing the windmills from the Netherlands. So it's not something you can find everywhere, but they have one in Holland. And Windmill Island Garden is a beautiful place to visit. Really, probably three seasons of the year. They pretty much close in the winter. And I like, as a good little tip, if you want to visit Tulip Fest, to avoid Tulip Festival crowds, go the weekend before the festival starts. That's kind of been our little tip. The tulips will still be kind of closed a little bit, but there will be, I'll say, 90% less people there, and you'll kind of have the gardens to yourself.
Yeah, the flowers will be pre-trampling.
Yes, yes. No one will have laid on them to take their selfies yet.
Yeah. Really, really fun place, though. One of our favorite places to go. And it's a quick drive for us, so it's a place when we want to get away, but we don't want to go for more than a day. That's sometimes where we end up. The next one on our list is one that actually we haven't really been to. We've spent a lot of time in the area. We've been within striking distance, but we haven't been inside. And that is Headlands Dark Sky Park. Headlands Dark Sky Park is just west of Mackinac City. If you're driving from Mackinac City to Wilderness State Park, it's basically right on the way. So you drive west from Mackinac City, when you hit Lake Michigan, it's right there. And it is, as the name describes, a dark sky park, meaning that you can go there to watch the night sky, and they have equipment to help you do that, and there aren't really lights or anything like that. One of Michigan's only dark sky areas.
And it's the first
dark sky area
in Michigan, for sure.
Yeah. And so we need to go there.
Yeah, it's one of the few places on this list that we have yet to visit.
You have to be willing to be up at night.
Yeah, which most of the time I'm not. Thus how I have missed the Northern Lights twice.
Yeah. But one of these times we'll get there. But if you're a big fan of astronomy or just looking at the night sky, It's a great place to go by all accounts. Now, the next one is one that we have been to a lot. And I mentioned it earlier when I mentioned Grand Rapids, and that is Meyer Gardens. Meyer Gardens is a large botanical and sculpture garden that is in Grand Rapids. It's called Meyer Gardens because Fred and Lena Meyer, founders of the Meyer grocery store chain, were big-time contributors to the garden, but it's not owned by the Meyer Corporation or affiliated with Meyer in any formal way. It just bears their name.
And their statues.
If you love sculpture, they've got it. They've got all kinds of sculptures, famous sculptures even, by famous artists.
The most famous one is probably Da Vinci's horse, which they have done on enormous scale, where you can stand under the horse.
Right, there's like one there and one in Venice, right? Like,
yeah, I think
there are only two in the world. That's an important one. But there's also, I mean, there's some of those Rodin statues that people know, like Eve is Rodin, right?
I think so.
And some other really significant ones, too. Ones that you would recognize if you are at all into sculpture. There are all sorts of gardens outside, like all sorts of different styles of garden. More formal ones, Japanese ones, more kind of fun and carefree and natural ones, ones that are with the sculptures.
Their children's garden is a pretty big deal, too. They even have a small little entryway for children where adults wouldn't fit. Mm-hmm. And then there's water features and things like that in the children's garden as well.
Yeah. And so then outside, too, there are trails that connect all these different spaces. It's quite a large garden. And the trails themselves can be really fun to walk on. They also have a fair amount of indoor greenhouse space. It's not enormous compared to outside, but they've got sort of the different climates and different ecosystems and things like that. And that's a really nice place to visit in the winter, especially because they have something for the holidays. They have a special exhibit with Christmas trees and things of that nature. They also do a butterfly exhibit in the spring, which we may have mixed feelings about.
I'm not allowed there. Not by them, by me, because I swat at butterflies. So for the safety and security of the butterflies, I do not allow myself to visit during that time.
Yeah. But if you like butterflies and you don't try to kill them, it can be a really nice thing.
The last time we were there, we actually spent a little bit of time in the carnivorous plant section. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot about carnivorous plants. And I found it fascinating that they don't bring in bugs for the plants. They just happen to get enough bugs to sustain the plants. It's very fascinating.
That is really cool. Yeah, it's a nice place to visit any time of year because depending on the weather, there are sort of different things you can do. In the summer, too, they run the big trams and stuff, too, that'll take you around. If you have limited mobility or just would rather tour that way than walking, that is an option for most of the year.
I feel like even if it's your first visit and you have no problem walking, just kind of giving you a lay of the land.
That's true. It's
I think
true.
The tram is a good way to go. And obviously, it doesn't run in the winter.
And you can see a lot of the sculptures, the big sculptures, relatively quickly if you're in that tram because they do kind of that loop. The other thing that's worth mentioning about Meyer Gardens is they have a pretty big outdoor amphitheater, and they bring in some people you may know for musical acts. It's a combination of people you may know and people that you definitely wouldn't know, but the Grand Rapids Symphony also plays there a fair amount, so it's a nice place to go listen to music. But yeah, this Meyer Gardens, a place that we like to visit a couple times a year and are big fans of. Oh, the other thing that's worth mentioning is if you do join there as a member, they have the reciprocal benefits with the American Horticulture Association. And if you are a member of another American Horticultural Association garden, as long as it's not inside of 90 miles, you should be able to get into Meyer Gardens for free, at least last we knew. So if you're somewhere more than 90 miles outside of Grand Rapids and you've got a membership to one of these other gardens, there is that reciprocal admissions program, which gets you in. It's really nice.
If you become a member at Meyer Gardens, the reciprocal admission would apply to Windmill Island in Holland.
Our last spot on this Western Lower Michigan bucket list is one of my favorites, and that is Sleeping Bear Dunes. Sleeping Bear is in Leelanau County for the most part, so we've mentioned that area already. The kind of main cities around Sleeping Bear are Empire and Glen Arbor, Empire especially being kind of the hub of that park. Sleeping Bear is a national lakeshore, which puts it in the national park system. It was formerly a county park, but it's been a National Park Service site for a long time now. So there are a lot of interesting things you can do there because it's kind of a spread out park. So the dunes are enormous, first of all. I mean, at their highest, I think they shoot up 400 feet above Lake Michigan. So you can do a scenic drive that puts you right on top of those dunes, and you can look out and you can see the people foolishly climbing down and then having to climb back up or get rescued. They have the rescue staff right there, and they tell you exactly how much it'll cost to get rescued too.
We did it when we were in college.
We did it.
That was good for me. I'm good.
Yeah, at night. We did it at night. It was cooler, but it was still pretty. I mean, it took us, I think, probably 2 hours to come back up.
Yeah, it wasn't easy, but it was an experience that I am glad that I have and hope to never do again in my life.
We do not recommend that you do this, just to be clear. We are not endorsing that.
Don't send your rescue fees to us.
Yeah. But yeah, very scenic, and you get this wonderful views of Lake Michigan. Another thing to do, it's quite popular, especially if you're traveling with children, is they have the dune climb. The dune climb is a more tame dune. It's still pretty substantial.
Not
it's,
as straight up and down.
But it's right outside a parking lot, and you can basically from the parking lot go right up. And if you want, there is a trail that goes all the way to Lake Michigan. I don't remember how far it is. It's, I think, less than 2 miles, I want to say.
He tricked me into this trail at one point in our relationship.
That's, I think, a story for another time.
Probably my favorite trail in Sleeping Bear Dunes is the Empire Bluff Trail. It's got quite a bit of elevation gain, so you have to be up for that. But the view at the end is amazing. I will say probably one of the best views in Michigan. Definitely top three best views in the Lower Peninsula.
Yeah, it's my favorite trail there, too. And it's just right outside of Empire. It's really easy to get to. There's some other hiking, too. Everyone kind of has their own favorite spot. The park is quite large, so there are lots of different places you can go. Two campgrounds that are worth mentioning, Platte River, which is a modern campground kind of in the south part of the park, is pretty away from a lot of what people think of when they think of Sleeping Bear. It's like in the very south end of the park. We've actually never camped there. The other one, which is one of my absolute favorite campgrounds, is DH Day. DH Day is a rustic campground. It's just outside of Glen Arbor, so it's kind of in the north part of the park. Glen Arbor is a really cool little town. It has some resorts and stuff, and it's got some resort people, too. But it's a fun town. But DH Day, until a few years ago, was not reservable, which so it would famously have kind of these big lines, and or it was just not a place we ever wanted to camp. For the past few years, it's been reservable, and it's been amazing. We've gone a couple times, and we really, really love it. It's right on the water, in the woods. Yeah, great campground.
There was one kind of late fall weekend that we went after the reservable season was over, and it was first come, first serve. And I want to say it was us and maybe three other campsites in the whole park. That was a very amazing experience. We got one of the sites right at the base of the dune. So you just climbed up the dune and there was the lake. And it was, like I said, late fall. So the breeze coming over that lake was very cold, but it was amazing. It was a great experience.
This was the same weekend that we went to Maupin.
But yeah, we love Sleeping Bear Dunes. It's a beautiful place.
Another place in Sleeping Bear that's worth mentioning is Glen Haven. Glen Haven is this old town that was a port town before Traverse City was. And it was originally when people were settling that part of Michigan, they thought that Glen Haven was going to be kind of this big city where ships would come in to take lumber out. There's no active industry in Glen Haven anymore, but there are these old historic buildings that are preserved by the National Park Service. And there's this cool hike bike trail that goes kind of through Glen Arbor and through Glen Haven into Empire. And you can go along that and see all those buildings. There's also plenty of beach opportunities throughout.
In 2011, Sleeping Bear Dunes was named the most beautiful place in America by Good Morning America. And since then, the crowds have found Sleeping Bear Dunes.
Yeah.
But it's not without reason. It's just, it's a beautiful place. Believe Good Morning America. Visit.
So that brings us to the end of our Western Lower Michigan bucket list. We'll be back on a future episode with the rest of the state.
For this week's travel tech tip, and that is an app that you should download called FlightAware.
Yeah, I'll tell you a little bit more about FlightAware because I am a pretty avid user. It's an app that helps you track your flights or flights that others are on. and you can look up information about those flights, the planes. I mean, if you're an aviation geek too, it's really nice. Like, for example, sometimes when we're sitting on the deck and a plane is flying overhead, I wonder where that plane's going. I look it up. But really what it's great for from a travel perspective is setting alerts so that you know when your flight plan gets filed, gives you a sense of, okay, this flight is really probably going to be on time because they've filed the flight plan. You can see the plane you're taking, you can see where it is right now. So if you're about to head to the airport and you see that your plane is not headed to the airport, you know that you might be in for a delay. It gives you a sense of what may be coming before everyone else. And what that allows you to do is be on your game if your flight does get delayed or canceled. You can be ready for it and you can be on the phone to that airline to get booked on another flight kind of ahead of everyone else. You get the delay notifications really, I think, ahead of the airline apps a lot of the time. And you can also set alerts. One of the things I really like to use it for when I've picked Ashley up from the airport is you can set alerts when a plane is 45 minutes out or an hour out or whatever, so you know when to leave to go to the airport to pick someone up too.
FlightAware is nice if someone that you know is traveling, because they can give you the flight number and then you can watch to see where their plane is, know when it lands, and know when you should be expecting.
Yeah, it's good for that too. So it's a nice way. Like, the interface is really nice. It's really easy to use and you get the notifications. If you're on a plane that does have Wi-Fi, you can sort of help track where you are if they don't have a good in-flight entertainment system, or you can see your projected arrival time if you're going to arrive early or late. And I have found that it tends to work on Wi-Fi even if you're not paying for Wi-Fi. Like, if you're on an airline, like, let's say Spirit, that has Wi-Fi but you have to pay for it, I usually have that stuff work even when I haven't paid for Wi-Fi. So yeah, it's something to try. No guarantees, but it's something to try.
It'll also let you know if your plane recently came from Cancun, therefore you can expect them to not have any beer, which was okay. Which was the case on our recent Frontier flight. Not that I wanted beer,
no,
but I noticed that the flight was coming from Cancun and then we boarded and they told us there was no beer.
So it's a free app. They have paid upgrades, but I use the free one and it does everything I needed to do. I should also mention that if you are a ForeFlight user, if you're that much of an aviation geek, you can send your plane's route into ForeFlight and watch it there too. If you really want to go deep on your plane navigation. So FlightAware, check it out. We'll put a link in the show notes. That's all for today's episode of Go See, Do, Explore. Thank you for joining us and sharing in the wonder of travel.
Keep the spirit of today's adventure alive by checking out our blog at goseedoexplore.com for even more travel inspiration.
Don't forget to rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really helps fellow travelers find us and join our community.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep dreaming, and keep traveling by any means necessary.
I'm Christopher.
And I'm Ashley, bidding you farewell and happy exploring.